Carlisle to Pittsburgh, Harrisburg to Lafayette Hill, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, state regulations and permitting are a roadblock to fully developing Pennsylvania's energy and data center potential. State Senator Greg Rothman is here to discuss his legislation designed to remove those roadblocks. There has been a lot of misinformation circulating on the impact of Medicaid cuts included in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Brian Blades from the Paragon Health Institute is here to set the record straight. And Pennsylvania stands at the threshold of a golden age in technology development. On this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary, Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania details what must happen to make that golden age a reality. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to State Senator Greg Rothman in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Is the race over for Philadelphia District Attorney? Incumbent progressive DA Larry Krasner, who has presided over an unprecedented uptick in crime in the city, defeated Patrick Dugan in last May's Democratic primary. But Dugan secured enough write-in votes to appear on the Republican ballot in November. Now the GOP is reportedly polling to see if Dugan would be a viable candidate. 2 years ago, Allegheny County DA Stephen Zappala Jr. likewise lost the Democratic primary to a George Soros-backed progressive, but he secured the Republican nomination via write-in and went on to win the general election. Philadelphia Republicans are weighing the prospects of repeating that feat. Incumbent Pennsylvania Republican members of Congress are significantly out-fundraising their opponents. The second quarter finance reports show Republicans Brian Fitzpatrick, Rob Bresnahan, Scott Perry, and Ryan McKenzie were the top four fundraisers during the reporting period. Pennsylvania is once again in 2026 going to be the epicenter in battle for control over the U.S. House of Representatives. Those four represent what are expected to be the battleground districts. Pennsylvanians are losing a record amount of money at casinos and online gambling platforms. That is translated into nearly $6.4 billion in revenue flowing into the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board in fiscal year 2024-25. The figure consists of the combined revenue from casino slot machines and table games, iGaming, sports wagering, video gaming terminals, and fantasy sports contests. U.S. Senator John Fetterman of Pennsylvania has joined forces with Republican Senator Kevin Cramer of North Dakota in introducing bipartisan legislation aimed at banning cashless retail operations. The legislation would require any in-person business at a physical location to accept cash amounts up to and including $500 per transaction. The bill would also prohibit stores from charging a fee to utilize cash. According to Fetterman, millions of people in the country do not have bank accounts and therefore are excluded from making purchases at stores that do not accept cash. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The recent Energy and Innovation Summit put a spotlight on over $90 billion in investment in energy and artificial intelligence technology in Pennsylvania. But state regulations and a cumbersome permitting process loom as potential roadblocks. State Senators Greg Rothman and Tracy Pennycook have introduced legislation to streamline that process. Senator Rothman represents the 34th State Senate District in Cumberland and Dauphin counties. He is here to talk about the proposal. Greg, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Greg, there's been a lot of talk over the last couple of weeks since the Energy and Innovation Summit that was held in Pittsburgh by Senator McCormick, attended by President Trump, about the future of AI, artificial intelligence, data centers, and energy in Pennsylvania. Before we get into the specifics of a bill that you and Senator Tracy Pennycook have sponsored, just your thoughts on what do you see as the potential for all of this here in the Keystone State?
Thanks for having me on, Loman. AI is computing. I mean, it is, whether you use it for Google Maps or to ask Google a question or advanced healthcare Department of Defense is using AI. AI is here. It's artificial intelligence. And in order to power AI, you need computing. You need data centers. So if you're imagine a cloud or imagine a place where you're getting energy from, I mean, that's really what data centers are. Pennsylvania is uniquely positioned, partly because of our geographical location, because the closer you are to the data centers, it's an engineering principle, the better things work. Energy is needed to run these data centers, and Pennsylvania has an abundance of clean, affordable natural gas. I think the second largest reserve in the country behind Texas. We need water because the computers need cooled, and we have these great rivers and lakes and streams. And also you need the high-skilled labor, the blue-collar labor, to build the data centers, the steel workers, because you need steel. And then you also need the high-level, high-tech workers that places like Carnegie Mellon and Penn State and all of our great universities are training. So Pennsylvania is uniquely positioned to capitalize on this data center AI revolution. And Senator McCormick's event last week with President Trump, they announced $92 billion in investments. And that goes to the grids. That's also nuclear. And it's going to change Pennsylvania, like reinvigorate a state that has led this country from its birth, right? And we were the Industrial Revolution. We our timber, our steel, our energy, even Marcellus shale and the natural gas boom happened here first. Now we're going to do it with data centers and AI.
So we have all of these abundant natural resources, the workforce, all the things you've just described here, Greg. There is, however, concern about state government and the fact that the permitting process, the regulatory process at the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania level oftentimes tends to get in the way of big things happening. So you've proposed some legislation designed to make sure that doesn't happen. Want to give us an overview of your bill?
The opposite of true is what Pennsylvania has. It discourages investment. So we have high tax rates, high regulation, and a permit paralysis, which what our bill says is that there is a program in place already, a fast-track program for critical infrastructure and critical industries that we're trying to attract. The governor's office has the Office of Transformation and Opportunity, which is there to help industries and business get all their approvals from state government. And then, of course, you have local government. And we still have this NIMBY, not in my backyard, which is remarkable because you have a data center which is going to produce millions of dollars in taxes to the school district, millions of dollars of tax revenue to the local community, and put very little, no children for that matter, in the school. So, and it's going to lead to additional jobs and sort of flywheel jobs around the data centers. So our bill says local municipalities have to treat data centers like they would treat any other manufacturer industrial use. You can't have special zoning for data centers. You can't prohibit them. It directs the state to work with anybody who's trying to do a data center, so it doesn't have to be a specific licensee or user, and we welcome them to Pennsylvania. The state of Virginia has 600 data centers. We have, with the announcement in Schuylkill County and the one in Carlisle, Middlesex Township, there's one coming to Lancaster, the Homer City ones, and Aliquippa, there might be 6 to 7 right now in Pennsylvania, so we could expect 100 times that many by the time we're done.
One of the things your bill proposes is something called a Commonwealth Opportunity Zone. What do you mean by that?
Opportunity zones are where government picks and chooses winners and says, look, we want you in this community or we want you here. And generally, they do it in areas that have been neglected, and they give tax benefits. And we didn't want to do tax benefits. We think that the industry will come irrespective of the tax incentives. So we want to make the opportunity zone the entire Commonwealth. So anywhere you go in the Commonwealth, you get the same opportunity, which is a welcome mat and a red carpet and arms wide open saying, come here. We want innovation here. Out in Pittsburgh, they have AI Avenue, and the AI strike team is out there with Joanna Dovin doing incredible things, attracting AI innovators in robotics and national defense. Google's there. It's all in Bakery Square. That's what we want. We want the whole state to be open for business, for data centers and artificial intelligence and high tech. I mean, the healthcare stuff that's going on, where you're using AI to read charts and diagnose blood labs. the AI in manufacturing, the AI in our distribution centers, the AI in almost every sector of our lives. I was recently told by the folks at Deloitte that they have an AI program now that can read building plans in 5 minutes, as opposed to having a human spend 5 hours or longer reviewing it. And so we need to take advantage of that. I actually heard a statistic recently that we're going to have a net increase in number of jobs because AI creates different opportunities for jobs and sort of takes out the mundane, maybe the lower-level job, but creates a higher-level job and more family-sustaining jobs, especially for our trades, which is something we're working towards as well.
We are talking with State Senator Greg Rothman about his bill before the Pennsylvania State Senate that would, to a large degree, smooth the way for the development of data centers, AI, and energy here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. One of the components of that is something you call a sandbox. Interesting term, but what exactly do you mean?
Yeah, so within the confines of a sandbox, it's a regulatory sandbox, the industry or the applicant says, hey, these are the things that I need help with. I've got to get PennDOT to approve my access to the property. I've got to get DEP to approve my stormwater management plan. I need to get L&I to approve my buildings. And the industry lists or the applicant lists, these are the regulations that I need help with. And the state helps you within that sandbox. So imagine, your grandkids or kids sitting in a sandbox. So they bring in their toys. They bring in the things they want to play with. Those are the things that we put in a regulatory sandbox. Senator Coleman has a more broader regulatory sandbox bill that would apply to every industry. This one with Chairman Pennycook and I just has to do with AI innovation and data centers.
There has been some concern raised here, Greg, about the amount of electricity that these data centers are going to use and whether that would create a shortage and cause rates to go up. But the flip side to that, and of course, Senator McCormick's seminar was energy and innovation. We have an opportunity here also, don't we, Greg, to develop our state's energy resources?
Absolutely. And you think about this with any product in a free market, the more productivity, the more opportunity, the more that we allow the market to innovate, we actually increase the supply, which then decreases the cost, the price. So look at farming. I mean, we don't put restrictions on farming and where you can farm and who can farm or yields, and yet we've allowed our farmers to innovate, and now they produce more food. The same thing will go with energy. We need data centers to create the demand for energy that then creates the innovation. Westinghouse has announced that they're going to bring in more nuclear power. Three Mile Island near us is going back on. I mean, this was had shuttered, was closing down, and is now going to open. I think there's 1,300 jobs, 1,200 jobs coming with that. So it's the data centers that are going to drive the innovation to create more energy. And by the way, we have plenty of natural gas in Pennsylvania to last many, many hundreds of years until we figure out another source. But this will also help us come up with other sources. I've heard about hydrogen and using small nuclear reactors to power the data centers. But what the bill also does, Loman, is it allows a data center who's generating its own electricity for the data center to sell off excess energy that it produces into the grid. So if you think about that water that's cooling those computers, that creates steam, and steam can be used to convert to electricity. Electricity can be put back in the grid and be sold. So we're hoping that happens as well. So I certainly understand that these things need a lot of electricity, but I think what it's going to do is going to create another energy revolution where we start figuring out how to create more and more electricity and more uses, ways to create electricity, which will help everybody. Because I believe energy and power is freedom. And that's why we built this state with all of our great energy.
Another component to all of this, Greg, are, of course, taxes. And I know the Republican caucus in the state Senate has been fighting hard in the current budget battle, which is ongoing here now, almost a month late. But this is a case of getting it done right rather than getting it done fast. One of the proposals that we have had over the last few years has been a slow reduction in the corporate net income tax rate. During the campaign, Governor Shapiro promised to accelerate that rate. Has he kept that promise, and are the cuts still on the table?
Yeah, it was one of the first bills I introduced when I got to the House, was to cut the corporate net income tax from an outrageous 9.99% down to, I think my bill was going to take it down to 3.07. We settled on 4.99, but it was going to go slowly. And Governor Shapiro did, like you said, I mean, he campaigned on it, said we were going to accelerate it, said it was necessary to attract businesses and people to Pennsylvania and economic opportunity to Pennsylvania. And he's not. In fact, you know, there was some wrangling talking about the budget that, oh, we may have to slow down the cuts. I mean, I'm a firm believer, I know you are too, of the Kemp-Roth tax cuts and Ronald Reagan tax cuts and the Bush tax cuts and even the Trump tax cuts, that when you cut tax rates, you create more revenue. And so the idea that, you know, we cut our taxes, but incrementally, and then every other state around us that had lower tax rates also cut theirs. I mean, money's fungible. We need to be attracting businesses. We're losing out in economic opportunity to places like Ohio and Virginia. And so I think that we need to speed up and accelerate that reduction and get down to a much more manageable 4.99%. Or I'd go for 3.07 too, which is what the LLCs and most small businesses pay.
Good idea. Good idea. State Senator Greg Rothman. Greg, thank you for being with us. Tell us where folks can find you on the web if they want to learn more about your bill to make sure that we don't choke off the development of AI data centers and energy in Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Loma. It's at www.senrothman@gov. So.
State Senator Greg Rothman. Greg, as always, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Loma. Take care.
The Big Beautiful Bill Act took a step forward in reining in out-of-control Medicaid spending, but the left has been misrepresenting the impact. Brian Blaze is here for a look at what the act actually does. He is president at the Paragon Health Institute. Brian, good to have you with us. Let's set the stage here. Medicaid, can you explain for us what the program was initially set up to do and who it was set up to benefit? And then, of course, as with many federal government programs, it has grown considerably.
Yes, it has. It is a joint federal-state program. So the federal government provides some rules, provides most of the funding, provides an open-ended reimbursement of state spending. It was originally intended to be a narrow welfare program. So low-income children, pregnant moms, people with disabilities, and some low-income seniors as a way to pay for some of their Medicare cost sharing. It has dramatically expanded since the early 1990s. So now half of all enrollees in Medicaid are what I call able-bodied working-age adults. And the biggest expansion was with Obamacare. Obamacare brought a new class of these able-bodied working age, generally childless adults, onto the program. And worse, the federal government covers nearly all of the state spending on this new set of enrollees. Actually, in terms of the funding, the federal government provides about 7 times more funding for every dollar that a state spends on the able-bodied working-age Obamacare expansion population than it does for the traditional enrollees.
To be clear here, a lot of folks confuse Medicaid and Medicare. We're only talking about Medicaid here, correct?
Correct. Yeah, the one big beautiful bill didn't make any changes to Medicare. The vast majority of enrollees in Medicare are people over the age of 65. You know, they pay payroll taxes when they work, and Medicare provides comprehensive health coverage for them.
Now, when talking about the one big beautiful bill, it's going to slash healthcare spending by about $1 trillion. But as you pointed out in a recent op-ed, the left and the mainstream media are relying on some numbers that are really mischaracterizing the impact of one big beautiful bill. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, so spending is going to continue to grow. What will happen is that the growth rate will come down over time. And in Medicaid, there's been a lot of cost shift from the states to the federal government over the last couple of decades. So historically, the federal government paid about 60% of the expense. It's now going to pay about 75%. It now pays about 75% of the expense. One of the motivations in the One Big Beautiful Bill is to restore Medicaid to really a joint federal state partnership so that states have more incentives to get value out of the spending. And the bill is going to do that in two ways. It's going to address this able-bodied working age population that was added to Obamacare, and it's going to address state financing schemes that have really increased inappropriately the amount of federal dollars in the program.
One of the changes here is a number of those working age adults that you referenced earlier going to now have to either get a job or engage in what's called community engagement. What do we mean by that?
So for the Obamacare expansion population, which is able-bodied working age adults, the federal government is now going to require that they engage in at least 80 hours of activity a month, and that activity could be employment, it could be job training, it could be education, it could be community service. But for this population where the federal government is spending almost the entire cost, there's going to be a different set of rules. And honestly, most Americans support work requirements on able-bodied working-age adults in order to receive a welfare benefit. So this is one of the key changes in the One Big Beautiful Bill for Medicaid.
You've also mentioned a certain amount of corporate welfare in the program and the One Big Beautiful Bill attempting to cut back on that. Explain how corporate welfare comes into play.
What states do is that they collude with politically powerful providers to create financing gimmicks. So what will happen is the provider will say, well, I'm going to transfer the state a set amount of money. And the state then spends that exact same amount of money back on the provider. Most people would think that's just an accounting gimmick, but then the state invoices the federal government. And since the federal government provides an open-ended reimbursement, it's a way that states could get all of this federal money that they use on those providers. They can use it for other purposes. You know, using this financing gimmicks, which, you know, actually Joe Biden, when he was vice president, he called these, they're like pseudo, they're called provider taxes. He called them scams. States are making extremely high payments to big hospital systems. And these health insurance companies that manage these arrangements, they're getting a portion of the cut. So we now have big hospital systems that are making large profits off of what is a welfare program. And this amount, this corporate welfare, this mechanism, we refer to it as the Medicaid money laundering mechanism, it exploded during Joe Biden's administration. And what the One Big Beautiful Bill does is it reduces the ability of states and providers to collude in creating these financing schemes, and then it limits the payments that the Medicaid program makes so that they can't exceed Medicare rates. Unfortunately, one of the problems is this corporate welfare has led to the Medicaid program paying much more for able-bodied working-age adults than the Medicare program pays for seniors on the program. And the One Big Beautiful Bill has a provision that would ensure the Medicaid program does not pay more than the Medicare program.
We have been talking with Brian Blaze, who is president of the Paragon Health Institute. And Brian, tell us a little bit about the Paragon Health Institute.
So Paragon, we are a relatively new free market health policy research organization. And we evaluate how government programs are actually working, and we develop policy solutions that empower patients and that reform these government programs, that reduce corporate welfare, and that best spend hardworking Americans' tax dollars.
And where can you be found on the web?
ParagonInstitute.org.
Brian Blaze of the Paragon Health Institute. Brian, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thanks very much.
A golden age of energy and technology development is about to dawn in Pennsylvania. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary on turning that potential into reality.
In a historic moment for our Commonwealth and the country, President Trump, sitting beside our esteemed Senator Dave McCormick and prominent tech and energy leaders, announced a record $90 billion in investments right here in Pennsylvania. As the senator so truthfully articulated during the inaugural Pennsylvania Energy and Innovation Summit, not since the days of Andrew Carnegie has so much economic power gathered in one Pittsburgh room. This summit, held just 6 months after the senator had been sworn in, is an illustration of the new momentum we're seeing due to the transformed landscape in Washington. Pennsylvania is ready to unleash our energy innovation, and our federal government is ready to embrace bottom-up solutions to improve our economic prosperity. Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania's taxpayer activists couldn't be more thrilled. The common theme of Senator McCormick's Energy Summit was the need to turn the page from top-down, stifling Washington control of our energy sector, to an era where red tape is removed, allowing innovation to be at the forefront of energy policy. What a welcome change! Through comprehensive permitting reform, we can restore our Commonwealth's economic prosperity. The American dream is only possible with reliable energy that's affordable and abundant. But energy regulations previously imposed by Washington are delaying projects and driving up costs, which are barriers that ultimately make energy, as well as the American dream, more expensive for us all. Energy abundance and lower prices at the pump are possible if we demand energy permitting reform. Harrisburg would be remiss to not take cues from leaders in Washington who are working tirelessly to remove the permitting barriers that hold us back. At the summit, there was a resounding enthusiasm for the United States to lead with respect to the booming artificial intelligence industry. AI is a remarkable tool, one that can and should be used to further human progress. AI offers transformative benefits across healthcare, education, transportation, and the broader economy. But these benefits can only be realized if we allow innovation to flourish, rather than strangle it with premature or heavy-handed government regulation. As such, states would be wise to embrace bottom-up approaches to innovation, rather than sweeping regulatory regimes with broad definitions that capture many technologies, not just AI. We advocate for state-led experimentation. Two states have gotten it right and should serve as national models that we believe other states should consider implementing. First is Montana's Right to Compute Act, which protects individuals' and businesses' abilities to use AI and computational tools with undue interference by the government. By establishing a clear right to innovate, the state sends a strong message that progress and personal freedom go hand in hand. There's also Utah's AI Learning Lab and Regulatory Sandbox, which provides a safe environment for innovators to test and refine AI applications while working collaboratively with policymakers. This model of learning by doing is a powerful alternative to top-down mandates and reflects the best of America's entrepreneurial spirit. As we enter the golden age of energy innovation, Harrisburg should wisely take cues from our new composition in Washington. The path to prosperity is paved by human progress, not government-imposed regulatory burdens. Join Americans for Prosperity PA's grassroots activists in thanking Senator McCormick for leading from the front. And learn more about how we can unleash our energy prosperity at prosperityispossible.com. This is Emily Green, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 30 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WLLF-FM in Hermitage, WRVI-FM in Clearfield, and WKHB-FM in southwestern Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
We'll be right back.